Pink Radio, brought to you live this morning, and we're very happy to be here. I'm Pocky Wieland, your host for today. And my guests today are sisters Ardith Platte and Carol Gilbert, who are anti-nuclear weapons advocates and activists for many years. And my other guests are two Code Pink interns, Clara Tripp and Reagan Davis. We're going to have a wonderful, I expect, multi-generational conversation of there and back, and whose shoulders are we standing on when, and how do we stand on one another and lean on one another as we continue to be activists well into the 21st century. But before we do that, we have a few announcements. The biggest, of course, is the Climate Action News and Actions. Tomorrow, Friday the 13th, a lucky day for us, because we have Greta Thunberg, and as I was reminded yesterday by Amy Goodman, that nobody quite ever gets her name exactly right, because we're not Swedes. She will be here. She will be here in Washington, D.C. So for you folks who are listening in other parts of the country, read it and weep. She'll be at the White House with us tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this is part of the Fridays, the big Friday strike. So I expect that the White House, in front of the White House, will just be packed, and the Lafayette Park will be overflowing. So if you want to see her up close or carry your banners that they can be seen, show up early. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow at the White House in Washington, D.C. And on Monday, the 23rd, we are going to be part of Shutdown DC, and we'll be talking a lot more about that later, so you'll get the opportunity to join an affinity group to Shutdown DC, and we'll give you more of that in our conversation. Other big things happening are a schedule of events, the People's Mobilization Against the War Machine. The U.S. War Machine has to be closed down, and there are many activities in New York City next weekend. Friday the 20th, People's Climate Strike, again another Friday activity, and Greta will be there. On Saturday, the Puerto Rican Independence Rally. On Saturday, September 21st, Race, Militarism, and Black Resistance in the Americas. And that's going to be very much engaged in with the Embassy Protection Collective. So if you're in New York, or if you're planning to go to New York, please join us for that. And on Monday, September 23rd, there's a solidarity evening with U.S. representatives from countries targeted by U.S. sanctions and intervention. For more information, go to popularresistance.org. What an active time we have, and we've just gotten a couple of more things here. On Monday, September 16th, starting at 11:30 a.m., join us for a rally in support of Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange. Chelsea is, as you know, incarcerated right here in Virginia, and Julian Assange is still in London, incarcerated. We hear that the gathering will be outside the Albert Bryan U.S. District Courthouse, located at 401 Courthouse Square in Alexandria, Virginia. The rally is in walking distance of the King Street Metro Center and the Alexandria Amtrak and VRE station in Alexandria. So keep in mind, this is 401 Courthouse Square, Alexandria, easily accessible by mass transit. So please join us. That's 11:30 a.m. next Monday. And finally, although it's never finally, is it? Protests the U.S. Air Force Association Arms Bazaar, and it's spelled B-A-Z-A-A-R, but we think it's quite bizarre. But there's the U.S. Air Force Association's Arms Bazaar, and we're invited to protest against that. And that's Tuesday, September 17th, noon to 1:30 p.m. And the place is the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center, 201 Waterfront Street, National Harbor, Maryland. Again, easily accessible by mass transit to get to National Harbor, Maryland. So please, they'll meet to vigil at the corner of Waterford Street, Waterfront Street, and St. George Boulevard. So please join us for that, to protest this outrageous arms bazaar, because this, what they're doing there, of course, is celebrating the theft of everything that human beings and the planet needs, from food, housing, schools, mass transit, health care, everything. And so rather than celebrate it, let's protest it and let them know that it's not okay with us. Anyone else have any announcements? No, not now. So without any further ado, let me introduce our first two guests, Ardith Plate and Carol Gilbert, who are two Dominican sisters who currently reside here in Washington, D.C., and have been very much a part of our activist community here. And it's so wonderful to have you here, to welcome you to this program, and to hear more about what you've been up to for how many years, and where are you now, and what's the issue that you want our listeners to know about?
Okay. We're living at the Dorothy Day Catholic Community, and previously we lived at Jonah House in Baltimore. So yes, we for years, many years, decades, have worked to stop war and to abolish nuclear weapons. So that has been on our agenda. We have really committed our lives to it. We see nuclear weapons as being the ultimate devastation of Mother Earth. We see it very deeply connected with the environment, because there's a slow death going on through the production, the manufacturing, the storing, the nuclear weapon industries. Also, we think that nuclear weapons really can be identified as the taproot of all violence. Because if you check every violent thing going on, whether it be poverty, whether it be, you know, the wars in the various countries, the stealing of their resources, whether it be the problem with border crossing, which, where we're doing coups and we're doing sanctions, whether it be racism, because we always do work on killing people of other countries, whether it even come down to domestic violence, and the ways we solve conflict in the world, in our own homes, etc. It's really the big business of the United States of America. And so therefore, I think we have to ask the question, do we really want our funds, our federal funds and our local funds and our state funds, to go for life or for death dealing?
So you've been doing this for a long time, and you've certainly, as you were describing that, really covered the waterfront when you look at the interconnections between this embrace of our country of nuclear weapons and every other ill that befalls the planet.
Well, it's the reason that the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists have declared 2 minutes to midnight, which the scientists say includes the environmental devastation, the climate devastation, and nuclear weapon devastation. So the scientists are making it clear that there will be Holocaust, either slowly, although it's rapidly coming upon us regarding climate, or the use or accident of nuclear weapons. And our thing that we want to do today to the listening audience is share something that the government is keeping very quiet, very, very silent about, and that is a new treaty, and we'll tell you more about that.
So, Carol, what would you like to add to that?
I think what I would add to what Ardith has already shared is that we're at a time when we really need to make the connection between those in the environmental climate change movements and those that are in the nuclear weapons and war. And I say that because anybody who really cares about the environment has to be concerned about war and nuclear weapons. Brown University just came out with a new study in which they say that the United States military is the largest institutional emitter of greenhouse gases in the world. So if we care about greenhouse gases, we must take on the military as part of that, and seeing the connection between that.
And I think we'll certainly talk some more about that, but we can't punctuate that enough, that the biggest polluter on the planet is the U.S. military, and by extension every other military, and yet it's so hard to get that across sometimes. I think, you know, when I'm at environmental gatherings and talk about the military, what oftentimes I'll hear people say is, of course everybody wants peace. But so I think this is one of our challenges. How do we really make this connection so that everyone who is engaged in trying to stop the climate chaos we're in will make this connection with the military and work to shut it down?
Well, the most important is the United States of America even talks about this in all their government documents. One is that we want domination of land, water, air, and also now outer space. And even in outer space, as every rocket is launched, any time that it is the vision for 2020 in place to actually fight war from space, through space, and into space, it destroys the ionosphere. And as we destroy the ionosphere, more and more we destroy the whole environmental needs for the nation, whether it be resources or whether it be, you know, breathing air, whether it be the water itself. So we need to think in terms of what do we want our country to be. Do we want a country that works with the rest of the world in partnership, or do we want a country that dominates, that has this supremacy mode, being first in killing, first in using fossil fuel, first in all of the ills that have to become controlled by the rest of the world?
So, and Ardith, I was going to say, why don't you say a little bit about the treaty, because this treaty that we really want to share with listeners today really passed because it includes the environmental and the humanitarian effects of war.
Exactly, and I think this is really important to move to the treaty, because when you talk about the U.S. joining with other nations, that the other nations, the ones who have already signed this, are leading the way. And there's an invitation to all of the nuclear countries to join in. But tell us more about that, because this seems like it's really been a quantum leap, as most folks have just forgotten about the threat of nuclear war. Along comes ICAN and this nuclear treaty. So please.
Well, be assured that, you know, now I'm appealing to the March for Our Lives, Black Lives Matter, all of the young people who are involved in the environment, and all the issues of this day, that we coalition together and that we recognize that the young people throughout the world met at the United Nations with all the ambassadors in March, June, and July of 2017. The amazing thing is these people pled the cause. They said, we as young people want a nuclear-free world, and we want a world without war. And the statement was, it's either the end of nuclear weapons or the end of us. So these young people pled for the United States people to learn more about this treaty. The treaty was signed on 7/7/17. That's the historical date. What it does is it fills in all the loopholes that were there from the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. So now we not only have, you know, the NPT in place where no proliferation can take place, but now we have that there can be no more construction, manufacturing, testing, deterrence is, you know, the threat to use. There can be no more ever use. There can be no more possession of nuclear weapons and nuclear explosives on the face of the earth. This treaty, as worked on by ICAN, that began organizing back in 2007, and they organize now, they have 541 groups of people from 103 nations gathered together. So they are working in every country to do the formal signature and the ratification, because 122 nations, major nations, have passed this treaty. So now they're out getting it ratified. This treaty will actually begin a whole new, a renewal of the face of the earth, because young people who are claiming that they want a nuclear-free world, they will begin to build this whole renewal where they can begin to work with other nations that are not going to be threatening them with nuclear weapons. They're going to bring those 800 bases back, the people back from those 800 bases to the home front. Those resources will remain in the hands of the people where our bases are. So the one other thing that I just have to say is it's silent, this treaty. But now, as we go throughout the country, the young people are taking hold of it, and they're beginning to also work to teach people in the United States what we have to do as a country, because we're number one along with Russia. We have 93% of the nuclear weapons in the world. The other countries, seven other countries, have a few in each nation. So the ratification process is in place, and in just 2 years, we have already half of the ratifications.
Oh. So wait, when you say half of the ratifications, deconstruct that, explain that, because I'm not sure.
All the countries now, after the treaty was passed, they have to formally sign it. We have 70 signatures in formal signatures, and each one of those nations has to go back to their own legislative body. In some, it's parliament. Here in the United States, it's the Senate. So we would want the people to call their senators and say, look, there's a treaty abreast. It's called TPNW, a treaty to prohibit nuclear weapons, which leads actually to the total elimination of nuclear weapons. So if they go, and anyone in the listening audience that goes on ICAN, I-C-A-N, International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or, you know, actually look up the treaty, you will find the whole process that has to happen. Our senators would have to vote to ratify this treaty. Right now, we have 25 countries, they call them states in the United Nations, we have ratified it. And on September 26th, we're all gathering back at the United Nations, and when we're there, we're going to evaluate where we are and the strategy yet that we have to use in order to gain this treaty to be implemented. Once it's in force, then we know every plan will be made to dismantle all the nuclear weapons.
And on the 26th, there are some other countries who will bring their ratification process to the United Nations. We need 50 countries to ratify before it becomes enforceable by law by the United Nations.
So you're working both locally with in cities and states, but you're also working nationally with our Senate and internationally with everyone else in ICANN.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right, and I think what the listeners need to understand is, in the United States, as U.S. citizens, what do we do? What's our part? And as Ardith mentioned, one would be pressuring elected officials who may not have even heard of this treaty. The other one is participating in a campaign called Don't Bank on the Bomb campaign. Code Pink has a divestment campaign, which includes both war manufacturers as well as the nuclear weapons. Don't Bank on the Bomb is looking at the nuclear people who invest in this, which are banks, and everybody can participate by just looking in your wallet and seeing who you bank with. Go to your bank, ask them if they participate in nuclear weapons, which they probably do. The only bank that does not participate is Amalgamated Bank, and we do happen to have a branch, or we do happen to have it in Washington, D.C., and local credit unions are another good place to go to. The other bank they're really working on is Paribas Bank, which is a French bank, or Bank of the West, because they have publicly stated they have a wonderful environmental policy, but they don't have one as it relates to nuclear weapons. And so we need to put pressure on that bank, which is the from about Wisconsin West is where that bank. Yeah.
So if you're a Code Pink member or work with Code Pink ever, you know we do have this big divestment campaign, and it includes the nuclear weapons. It also includes a divestment from handguns and other smaller weapons.
That's right. That's right. And I think, lastly, what I'd like to say here to listeners is a wonderful film is Scarred Lands, Wounded Lives, which you can easily access online. They divided up now into about 6 parts, which really shows the environmental devastation of war on the planet. So if anybody doesn't recognize that connection, Scarred Lands, Wounded Lives will bring it. And also the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a new resource on climate justice, women and peace, because women are more affected by nuclear than men are. And there's even a place for that in the treaty. But they talk about climate change and they talk about conflict militarization and the connection between those two.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm very hopeful about, and you might want to say something to add to this, that years ago in talking about justice, I've been reminded that white folks in the United States are not the people who could even identify justice. We need to hear from other people in the world what justice means. As I was listening to you talk about the other nations in the world, the other nation states in the world who have already ratified this, it's such a reminder that it is the non-nuclear nations who have already signed this because they are the most vulnerable. And then I think we, as we encourage our leaders and ourselves to have some kind of humility to understand what our white supremacy has done throughout the ages, that this is another way to address that and to make corrections, to make amends, if you will.
Paki. And Beatrice Finn, who's the director of ICANN, talks about it in terms of nuclear apartheid. That the nuclear countries are holding the world hostage to the nuclear weapons.
So here are two amazing women who have for, as you noted, decades worked not only against nuclear weapons, but for justice and peace against war. And also sitting here in the studio, I have two young women who, when these wonderful women were beginning their work, were not even born. and so I'm curious to hear, and you could just introduce yourselves as again, because our viewers can't, we don't have viewers, our listeners can't see you. So I'm curious, as you're listening to Carol and Ardith, what you're hearing and how that informs the work you're doing now.
Hi, I'm Clara Tripp. I am one of the Code Pink interns.
Yay.
And I think one of the things that I think about when I'm hearing this discussion about a nuclear-free world is how in my generation, I think we've largely been desensitized to the existence of nuclear weapons and our own country having such a large nuclear arsenal. And I think that the conversation has been shifted very effectively by largely our government and our military, not to say that nuclear weapons are good, but to stop talking about the nuclear arsenals that already exist in this nuclear apartheid that you're talking about, and use nuclear weapons as the boogeyman, again, as it was when they were being developed during, you know, the Cold War, and moving it to justify war on largely non-white nations. Like, for example, you can look at the push for war with Iran. They were abiding by the JCPOA, and then we were the ones that unilaterally removed ourselves and continue to spread false information from this administration about Iran being a nuclear threat when it's simply not. You can see that there's this new show on Amazon, I believe actually it's the second season of Jack Ryan, Venezuela edition, where in the commercial they talk about, you know, you're not going to hear about a nuclear Venezuela because when you do, we'll all be dead. And that's just like historically inaccurate. Like Venezuela has shown little to no interest in war beyond its borders. And it's just nuclear weapons have just been used to create this panic in white America towards largely non-white nations. And it allows them cover from the fact that any responsible entity should not want nuclear weapons, because there is no value to nuclear weapons. There's no value to having the power to destroy the world and destroy the environment. And if you want the power to destroy the world and destroy the environment, you're probably not a responsible entity. And so the U.S. should not want nuclear weapons, and they should not have an arsenal of nuclear weapons.
Beautiful. I actually...
And who are you?
Yes. Hi. My name is Reagan. I am also a Code Pink intern. And I would say that thinking in particular about the countries that you talked about, there was one nation that you didn't touch on, and I think that it might be an example of how nuclear apartheid leads to nuclear proliferation. Mm-hmm. Because when we're talking about Iran, we're talking about people like the thankfully ousted John Bolton, constantly pushing for regime change, constantly pushing for a first strike. You don't hear that as frequently with North Korea. North Korea gets a seat at the table. North Korea gets diplomacy. North Korea gets Donald Trump being the first president to ever walk along the 48th parallel. Why? Because it is a nuclear threat. And so when you have this nuclear apartheid, what you also end up with is more countries saying, well, this is the only way that I can protect myself from these large, powerful, majority white nations that can enact their will on me at any point. And so I think that that's why it's particularly important that we all go and we look up ICAN and we all go and push our senators to support this, because really the nations that have the largest nuclear arsenals are going to be the ones that need to be on board with this new abolition treaty more than any other country. You know, it's easy to see how non-nuclear nations are affected by our behavior and by our actions on an international stage, but it's not as easy to convince your leaders who believe that they need this to make that change. In reality, the United States is the one that needs to make it the most.
Yeah, I think I want to go back to something that Clara said earlier about Venezuela. When I was there with the Embassy Protection Collective a month ago, one of the things I was really struck by, we met with the president and the president of Venezuela, and he said what he wanted was peace because he wanted prosperity for his country, and they can only have it if they're not working, if we end the sanctions, among other things. But they want peace, and it reminded me of that, you know, that song, you know, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Unless, of course, you are an arms manufacturer or you have stock in arms. So I think to underscore what you were saying, Reagan, about the apartheid and how it's applied, how we actually see it. For those of us who remember going into Iraq, starting the shock and awe, everybody who was paying attention knew that the reason that Iraq was vulnerable was because it didn't have a nuclear weapon. And I think that's one of the things we see again and again, that if you don't have one, you're more vulnerable than if you do. And I think you're pointing out North Korea is a great example of that.
Well, now Turkey wants to have it. Now Saudi Arabia wants to build nuclear power and get nuclear weapons. So the proliferation is going to be extensive in the years ahead unless we really deal with this treaty, bring it to fruition, and get rid of all the nuclear explosives and all the nuclear weapons. Just know also, think of the cancer causing throughout the years. People who have, you know, had the causes definitely connected with taking in uranium out of the land, enriching uranium, all the jobs in every one of those big corporations that get federal monies, billions of dollars. Yeah. So it's really important what you said. I'm so glad. See, there are young people in the United States who are definitely astute and ready to roll on it.
And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Now we're going to take a break for a moment for a little music. And for those of you who have been listening, we'd like to invite you to call in to 202-588-0000. 0893 if you have comments or questions. But thanks for the music.
So mean, my man, he don't love me, treats me awful mean. He's the lowest man that I've ever seen.
Did you say we have a caller? Hello?
Hello, this is Rick calling you long distance from Germany.
Hello, Rick.
I have a question for the host.
Yes.
It's about nuclear weapons versus the peace initiatives embedded in the international space programs.
Yes, go ahead, Rick.
Do you trust that the space program is intended for peace?
Rick, no.
The ABM treaty was broken already, which was intended for peace. So if you read the document, Vision for 2020, and if you read the documents coming out after, the United States says it is the completion of their kill chain. That means that they actually are doing a lot in space in preparation for devastation from outer space and into it. They're already using some of the capacities because, like in the war against Iraq, they had the receivers on the ground and the MILSTAR 23,000 miles out in outer space, and it was like showing where to target, showing, you know, the communication system was built by it. So we believe that we should take care of Mother Earth at this time and really develop all of the capacity to feed all of the people and give the basic human needs, work as partners.
Do you want to say something, Carol?
I hear that you're calling from Germany. The only thing I would say is that we know that there are many people in Germany who are working to try to get the United States nuclear weapons. There are 20 of them on their soil at Buschel Air Force Base, and they're working very hard to get them out of that country.
Wonderful. So, yes, we don't think that this this new Star Wars is going to be anything for peace at all. And we in the U.S. are going to do everything we can, both with our legislators and everywhere we can with the divestment program to fight against that. The last thing we need is more war-making capacity. So thanks, Rick, for the call. All right. So here we are back live in our station. Here we are in Eastern Standard Time. And you are going to follow up with this discussion on both nuclear weapons and what the meaning for you all is today, and you all being you young interns, the next generation.
Absolutely. I see a lot of connections between the way that in the Cold War, the creation of nuclear weapons terrorized younger generations. You see the old PSAs of telling, kids in school to hide under their desks in the event of a first strike.
Actually, some of us did that.
And we have people here that did that. And now you have Reagan and I, who grew up doing active shooter drills in schools against the the gun violence epidemic, mass shootings overwhelmingly occurring in schools. And I see many connections between those two things, not just because they're both weapons, but because the military continues to innovate in its ability to kill people and is irresponsible about the way that affects the psychology of our nation, the way that is a threat to the world, a threat to the countries that we act aggressively towards, but also is a threat towards our future generations. The weapon of choice for mass shooters are assault rifles, and that was a weapon developed for the military. It was developed to kill lots of people very quickly, and then we've allowed it to now be a civilian weapon because the military no longer really wants a distinction between those who are actively in service and actively fighting wars and those who are, on American soil and who are not actively or active military members who feel still like it's their patriotic duty to, defend what they view as their land and their borders. And I think that's directly connected to these mass shootings is it's related to military training. It's related to military tactics. It's using military weapons to enact a patriotically inspired violence. And I think it's impossible to disconnect those two things.
Well, it's certainly having the availability of the weapons. And that's one of the biggest things is they are so available. Any of us could go out and buy them within a few hours. And so that availability combined with whatever it is that's triggering the anger of people to do the mass killings, I think is obviously redundant, but it's lethal. And it's totally understandable. I was thinking, we were talking about this, those of us who grew up under the cloud of the possible nuclear bomb, and those of you living, and all of us, because it's you and so many young people who are feeling this, and to have this reminder that none of us are safe, and certainly not safe from gun violence. And how, what does that do to the psyche? What does that do to to our everyday lives? And how do we find, and I think this is where one of the things that we in Code Pink are doing together is finding communities of resistance to say, no, we will not succumb to fear.
Absolutely. And the way that you were talking about succumbing to fear reminds me a lot of a phenomenon that I have personally experienced, and then I know a number of individuals in my generation have experienced, and it's called climate despair. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is incredibly common, especially for young folks. And I think it's one of the major reasons why we have been able to become so active in fighting against the climate crisis. You know, climate despair is a phenomenon in which individuals become so distraught upon learning about and realizing that the world could potentially end within our lifetimes, and every estimate puts the deadline of when we're seeing the effects, and the effects are becoming catastrophic, closer and closer to right now. It puts people, you think about Greta Thunberg, you know, she talks about how she was propelled to start her activism because she first went through a period of deep depression, and the effects of climate despair are comparable to those of clinical depression. And thankfully, we've seen a good number of young people getting out and becoming active against this because it's something that we see ourselves as connected to. But I really do hope that my generation starts making the connection that you two were, that Ardith and Carol were talking about earlier, where it's not just climate change as an isolated issue.
That's right.
Right? That's right. We love in our society to individualize problems. We love to say, oh, well, you should start carrying around a metal straw, you should stop flying, you should stop driving, but then we allow our military to have an entire air force of people flying. We allow our military to have an entire army of people driving not just average cars, but tanks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's terrible for the military, but it is even more devastating for the climate. And unfortunately, I think because we as young people have to deal with things like the climate catastrophe and with gun violence as such direct impacts to our lives. You know, 97% of us have had to interact with an active shooter drill before. That is something that is intimately tied to our lives in a way that, you know, the military-industrial complex is sneaky. And it likes to operate in the background because it's less likely to get protested. It's a lot easier to see the impacts of gun violence. It's a lot easier to see the impacts of climate change. And because those things are just as much a threat to our lives as nuclear war, you know, those things take up our energy. But we don't realize that nuclear war is not only intimately tied to those issues, but can make those issues much worse. You know, as I think about, for example, Yemen, where we are funding the Saudi-led war. Most of the people in Yemen who are experiencing the negative impacts of this war, which is considered to be the worst humanitarian crisis that's happening right now, are not the people being directly bombed, not the people being directly shot. They're the victims of famine. It's a combination of military and climate change disasters. Mm-hmm. And as much as I am proud of our generation and inspired by people in our generation for mobilizing for these issues, I would really love to see moving forward more of a connection, because these things are intimately connected. Our military is going to keep polluting and climate change is going to get worse. And as climate change gets worse, the impacts of our military and the water wars and the fights over resources are also going to get much worse. And you really can't separate them from one another.
And Reagan, just know that just as the NRA buys the votes from the politicians in Congress, just think about the federal budget, where more than 50 cents out of every dollar paid for the federal taxes goes for the military-industrial complex. When you see the hundreds of billions of dollars that go to the corporations like Lockheed Martin and Boeing, and you make all these connections with all of the corporations that make profit, we know that those big businesses in the United States of America must be converted over to all the corporations that will do what will benefit the people, not that will continue to destroy the people.
you know, the way we change systems is through direct political and legal action. And that's what you young people have really an awareness of. In our days in the 60s, we did it too. You know, civil rights, the farm workers, you know, anti-Vietnam. But today, we have our issues before us. And in order to build for the seventh generation, the world for the next generations, you and we together must do those actions.
And you're the leaders. You know, you said to me the other day, what are you going to do for the shut it down? And we need to talk a little about that now. And I said, I'm going to be your cheerleader, you know, because I'm so excited to have you, this generation, young people leading this cause, and to build on everything that's gone before you. And that's one of the nice things that's happening. You know, we're countering the ahistorical nature of our culture, and it's really wonderful. So let's segue into this. What's coming up next week with climate change and countering it? Let's see. We say shut down D.C.?
Yeah, we're going to shut down D.C. Spooky, spooky. Shutting down D.C. is a concept that has been utilized before in the past, and that's really cool. It's one of those multi-generational efforts where you look at the group. We had a meeting last night, and you see people of all ages. You have some people who are still in high school, and you have some people who are, you know, well into their 60s and 70s, and they're all participating. But Shutdown DC is something that is happening on the 23rd of September. So mark your calendars and feel free to get involved. We need as many people as we can get. And it is being run by a conglomeration of different organizations, both climate change centered and centered on other issues. We have migrant justice groups. We have LGBT queer liberation groups. We have Code Pink, an anti-war group. So it's a group of everyone who recognizes that climate change is not just one issue, but integral to preserving the future so that we can fight off every other issue. So basically the strategy that we are going to be doing, and obviously we don't want to say too much on the radio, but what we are going to be doing is shutting down key infrastructure using the resources we have at our disposal, using banners, using our bodies, using each other to make sure that business as usual cannot go on, because right now business as usual is what's killing the planet, and we need to make those who don't already care about this issue understand that in 10, 20, 50 years, this is not going to be something you can just pretend isn't happening. It's already a part of our daily lives for the vast majority of people in one way or another, be it through the climate, be it through our water bills, especially if you look, for example, at nations that are not the United States. You know, those being most affected are going to be those poorer nations, those nations in the global south. Those are the people who are most going to be affected, and it's easy here in the United States to ignore them. So we're going to try and make it a little bit harder on the 23rd. And you can feel free to email me, R-A-E-G-A-N, Reagan, at codepink.org, if you would like to get involved in our particular affinity group for this, so that you can get to meet some of the people who are talking right here and some other really great anti-war activists for climate.
And this action that we're doing with Shutdown DC is being organized in solidarity with the youth marches happening in New York City on the 20th. So we are adopting their demands as well for environmental justice and for the protection of our future. And I'm really excited about this action because it is so intersectional. Because just we were talking about today about all of these issues being connected and all of our futures being connected is so important to acknowledge moving forward in activism, because it's so hard to dismantle a system without dismantling at its root. It will continue to grow back in a new way. And I think that something that I see with the affinity groups when you've come together, and in my conversations with just a lot of friends and family, is that the concern with climate change isn't just that it'll destroy our world as we know it and the environment that sustains us, but that the people that will be affected will not be the people that are responsible. It will be the global South. It will be migrants first and foremost. It will be communities of color that have been systematically removed from resources for decades and centuries. And when resources become more scarce, will be the first ones to go into famine. You can see overwhelmingly that this will exacerbate the already present inequalities that exist. And so it's super important that we really take direct action to shut down DC.
So I love what you're saying, and want to just underscore how important it is for our listeners to pay attention to what you're talking about, and that it is wonderful that all these different groups are coming together. And I think what I'd encourage people to do is to look more deeply into this, is to do your own studying. When we look at the war in Syria, that was really rooted in years of famine because of the droughts. And the same thing as you alluded to earlier in Yemen, that it is the climate change that has also exacerbated so many other things, including this northern migration particularly from the Central American countries. And so I think it's important for us to educate ourselves more about these issues, the underlying issues, but also, and most importantly right now, to get out on the streets, to do the lobbying, to talk to your legislators, to talk to your bank, but to get out on the streets with other people, to let the whole world know that we are together, and we're going to change this, turn this around. I'm just being reminded we have one more minute, so I want to thank Sister Ardith Plate and Carol Gilbert and Code Pink interns Clara Tripp and Reagan Davis for being my guest, and come on out onto the streets to join us.
Thank you very much. And as T.S. Eliot says, Pocky, do I dare disturb the universe?
Hear, hear.
Multi-dimensional, amazing, unexpected sound, refugee also. Yeah. The sweetest thing I've ever known was
like... That's Code Pink Radio here on WBAI 99.5 FM. And WBAI.org on the web. That's a joint collaboration between the New York and the D.C. Pacifica radio stations, WPFW broadcasting at 89.3 FM. Of course, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, community radio WBAI broadcasting at 99.5 FM in the middle of the FM dial. Please visit us online at WBAI.org. Consider becoming a sustaining member, a BAI buddy. For as little as $10 a month, you can help sustain and support programs like Code Pink Radio, Black Lives Matter before that, Democracy Now!, Equal Rights and Justice, all that you listen to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, thanks to listeners just like you. Again, that's WBAI.org. And remember, our pledge line is always open, always available for you to make a contribution in support of your favorite radio station that has been on the air since 1960. You heard me. 1960, listener supported. We thank you so very much for your ongoing support of WBAI. Coming up at noon will be the Gary Null Show, so you want to stay tuned for that. Right here, listener-sponsored WBAI.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
We've got our friends at CNN here. You guys love breaking news, and you did it. You broke it. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him.
We're with you, Michelle Wolf, but if corporate media has got you down, maybe you should try WBAI. We're listener-supported community radio, questioning the mainstream narratives trumpeted by the news profiteers. But in order for this whole thing to work, we need your help. Please go to give2wbai.org to find out how you can support WBAI or call 516-620-3602. And thanks for supporting Free Speech Radio on WBAI New York.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ray Blanchett, host of the Gospel Challenge series heard on WBAI Sundays from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. This Sunday, we're doing a special broadcast of The Maafa Suite, A Healing Journey, live from St. Paul's Community Baptist Church in Brooklyn, New York. Maafa is the Kiswahili word for the African Holocaust, and The Maafa Suite, A Healing Journey, is the telling of the African peoples in the Americas and their forced introduction to the Americas through chattel enslavement. It's a dramatic telling of the consequences and realities of that history in the lives of African people in diaspora.
That's Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m., The Maafa Suite, A Healing Journey, on listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
Hey, this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
It's 12 noon in New York City at 99.5 FM WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, The Gary Null Show.